Hi, I'm Josh James, and this is WUKY's Bookmarks. On this episode, Julie Wren speaks with Pulitzer-nominated author Margaret Ferbel, who will be appearing at the Kentucky Women Writers Conference.
So you were raised in Nashville and live in Lexington, but your bio states that you are an enrolled and voting citizen of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma. What does that mean, and what's an example of something you might vote on?
Okay, well, for example, I might vote on the chief. We have a new chief.
I see.
And we've just had elections, and he's just been inaugurated. What it means, really, and the reason that I put that on there is that, I am actually a Cherokee, and there are a lot of people who claim Cherokee to be Cherokees. Mm-hmm. And are not. And as in art, it's also true in literature, people need to know that they're getting something that is authentic. And so that's the reason I put that in the biography, so they'll know that.
That's fascinating. Okay, I'm glad you explained that. And how do you keep abreast of the news? Is there a listserv or a... how do the members of the nation who are spread geographically across the country communicate with each other?
Oh, well, we have a newspaper and we have a magazine, and I'm on Facebook with a lot of Cherokees, and of course I've got an extended family in Oklahoma, so I don't have any trouble keeping up with the Cherokee news.
I see. Okay. So you have said that the impulse behind these two novels was to preserve the culture and stories you were told growing up. What drew you to fiction as the best way to capture that?
Well, I'm an English major.
Ah.
So that was sort of set, that I was going to go toward fiction rather than toward history.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you'll be in good company at the Women Writers Conference. So you wrote Cherokee America before you wrote Maud's Line, even though you published them in reverse order. Now, Cherokee America is set in 1875 and Maud's Line in 1928, so you actually wrote them in chronological order. What interested you about those two particular time periods, and what changes occurred in the Cherokee Nation between them?
Oh, Gina, I can talk for a long time on this. Let me talk about Maud's Line first, since it was published first. I was advised when I was trying to get Cherokee America published that what New York was really looking for from a first-time novelist was a simple storyline that followed a single character. Now, Cherokee America is a complex storyline, and the primary reason that it's complex is it is about Native Americans. And Native Americans, it's hard, you can't really understand Native Americans unless you understand their relationships. They live in tribes and communities, being in a complex web of relationships is crucial to being a Native American. So I went home. I had been at a conference, a writer's conference.
Mm-hmm.
Up at Kenyon College, and I went home and I thought about that, and I thought, well, I'm going to have to write a simple storyline, but I want to write about these people, these same people, the Cherokees, and on the same piece of land. And I thought, well, now how am I going to do that and write about one character? So I had to pick, in order to do that, I had to pick really a low point in Cherokee history. And 1928 was certainly a low point in Cherokee history. At that time, the rolls were closed so that anybody that was born after the rolls, and that would include Maud, was officially not a Cherokee, although she could have been a full blood, because the U.S. government policy was to get rid of the Cherokees and other non-reservation Indians by decree. That is, you enroll the ones that are alive at a certain point, and then if they have children, they're not enrolled, so they're officially not Indians. So within a generation, you can get rid of Indians. So that's what was going on. That was the U.S. Indian policy. So it was really low point in the tribe. These people were going to have to find a different way to live other than live as Indians. And, I mean, there wasn't even a chief. All the tribal government had been destroyed by the U.S. government. So I thought that was a good time to set that novel. It was also a good time to set it because 1927, the year before, was a year that was pretty important in American history. Lindbergh flew the ocean. There were massive floods. You know, Babe Ruth was doing all sorts of things. It was a big year. It was in the middle of the Roaring Twenties, or almost at the end of the Roaring Twenties, I should say. But there was a lot written about 1927, so I could read a lot of background and get that information. And then, of course, we all know what happened in 1929.
Right.
So 1928 was a nice little place to set that novel.
I see. And then Cherokee America being set in 1875, that is a time when the tribes are still flourishing?
Well, the tribes, I don't know that flourishing is the correct word, but they were still living as Indians. And they had been just through a terrible time with the Civil War.
I see.
And there had not been much written about that. You know, you could not go to a lot of literature, except literature about outlaws. But literature about regular people who are not outlaws, you couldn't find anything on that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the novel, Cherokee America was the novel that I originally set out, as you said, to write. And I set it in 1875 because I think there was a big void in the American consciousness about what had happened to the Cherokees after the Trail of Tears.
I
wanted to help fill that void. And I also was interested in particular people, and certain things happened in 1875 to these people that gave me an anchor for this story.
Mm-hmm. Okay. At the Women Writers Conference, you'll be on a panel about female protagonists in historical fiction, especially women of color. How do you find a balance between making these characters representative of their culture as well as universal? And I ask this question remembering Toni Morrison's famous answer when asked why she didn't have more white people in her novels. She responded that nobody expected Russian novelists to depict non-Russians, and yet their work is embraced as universal.
Well, I have not had a terribly hard time with that because, particularly in Cherokee America, for instance, let me talk about that for instance. Cherokee America Singer, the primary character, is faced at the very beginning of the novel, and you find this out in the first few pages, that her husband's dying.
Mm-hmm.
And she has five children. Now, that is a universal experience.
Yes.
So she is caught in a situation that no matter who you are, where you are, you're going to relate to that as a woman. There are some things in the novel that I know that my audiences have a hard time relating to.
Mm-hmm.
I gave a talk the other night. And I won't tell you exactly what the question was because we're on radio, but it was basically about the sexuality in the novels.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the readers have had a hard time, particularly more prudish readers have had a hard time relating to that. And, you know, the answer to that question is that the Cherokees really did not have a whole overlay of Christian Victorian values about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And so to portray them in the way that they really were You know, they were pretty sexy in different ways. And so that, some readers have a hard time relating to that. Some readers love it, but some think, you know, gee, you know, that's a lot of sex.
They're used to novels set in the same time period where that are not set.
That are not sexy.
Yeah.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
Interesting. My guest has been novelist Margaret Verbal, who will appear at the Kentucky Women Writers Conference on September 20th. For more information or to register for the conference, you can visit KentuckyWomenWriters.org or call 859-257-2874. I'm Julie Rinn.